Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Good morning, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Barber Marina, Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazines, Richardson's Map Tech, Passage Maker Troller Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you are dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our store at www.greatloop.org/store. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to all of our listeners out there. As Beth said, this is America's Great Loop Cruisers weekly blog radio show. We're coming to you on Friday mornings at 10 o'clock every week. With us today are Steve, and I'm Janice Cromer, and we are part of the Homeport crew. If there's any non-members listening to the show, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, the Great Lakes, the Atlantic and Gulf Intracoastal Waterways, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and, of course, the Inland River System of America. Our organization, which is shortened to AGLCA, is about sharing a sense of adventure and curiosity about the Loop. Our primary purpose is to get you information and enhance the overall experience. Our website is www.greatloop.org. Please visit and become familiar with it. There's quite a bit of free information for members and non-members, but of course we'd love for you to join. Our guest hosts this week are Bruce and Susan Armstrong. The Armstrongs are harbor hosts for the Naples, Florida area. They're also authors of the very popular book, Coming Full Circle, A Voyage on America's Great Loop. The book is available on our ship store at www.greatloop.org. And Bruce and Susan are going to tell us about cruising around the southern tip of Florida. Welcome, Bruce and Susan. Thanks so much for being on our show today.
Well, hello, Janice and Steve, and thank you so much for inviting us. We are happy to be here.
Okay, let's get started. I understand that when you get to Fort Myers, Florida, you have a major decision to make. Why don't you...
Yes.
The alternatives?
Well, when you get to Fort Myers, you can get to the east coast of Florida one of two ways. You can go up the Caloosahatchee River past Fort Myers and take the Okeechobee Waterway, or you can go south and you can go around the southern tip of Florida and come up through the Florida Keys. The difference is about 150 miles to cross the Okeechobee Waterway, and depending upon your route, it could be anywhere from 325 to 450 miles to go down around the Keys and reach the same point on the East Coast. Susan and I have done both routes. We've done both routes two times. Our advice would be that if you have the time and if you don't mind the extra fuel costs, the trip down around the southern peninsula of Florida and through the Keys has a lot of very interesting and scenic places to stop.
There's a lot of old history in that section of Florida, too, isn't there, Bruce?
There is. You're getting down into the Everglades. You're getting into some heavily fished areas, some areas that had some colorful history with gator poaching and prohibition and drug running and a fabulous history out in the Dry Tortugas.
Why don't you tell us about the first major city you'll come to if you go around the tip? It's Naples, I believe, isn't it?
It is. If you leave Fort Myers, assuming you stopped there, you've got about a 15-mile run to the Sanibel Causeway Bridge. After you cross underneath the Sanibel Causeway Bridge, it's about 25 nautical miles south to Gordon Pass at Naples. Now, when you look at your chart, you'll see a couple other passes, Doctor's Pass and Wiggins Pass, Clam Pass. All of those passes are north of the city of Naples. They lead into small, shallow bays and housing subdivisions, and they are subject to shoaling. The pass that you want to be looking for is Gordon Pass. Gordon Pass is a big, deep-water passage into Naples Bay, and it handles 100-plus foot boats. You'll not see less than 10-foot depths anywhere in the channels at low tide.
That's surprising. On the Intracoastal now, 10 feet is considered great.
Yes, Naples Bay itself is very deep and can handle quite large boats. There are a number of places to stay. There are a number of marinas and a couple of yacht clubs that can, and I'm sure people can look at their waterway guides. But for the purposes of this, let's assume that if you're going to stop, you're going to turn north on Naples Bay, come back up about 2 miles, and stop at the Naples City Dock, which has transient slips and transient mooring balls available and does sell fuel and bait. There are 3 major shopping, dining districts in downtown Naples, and if you are at the city dock, you are at Creighton Cove, which is the smallest of the 3. Literally, when you step off the city dock onto the sidewalk, you are at the dock restaurant, one of the nicer casual on-water seafood restaurants in town. But within a block, you also have the Cove Inn, which has reputedly the best breakfast in Naples. You have a French restaurant. You have a pizza place. And a couple of eclectic shops that are kind of fun to wander through. If, instead of staying in Creighton Cove, you walk 7 blocks north, you're at Fifth Avenue South. And Fifth Avenue South is the major shopping and dining area in town. It's full of restaurants, art galleries, shopping, and the Sugden Theater is located there. If you're interested, you could stop at the box office, and if the show isn't sold out, go see a live play while you're there.
What kind of plays do they have there, Bruce? Is it off-Broadway type musicals or just straight drama? Or
Actually, they have 2 theaters, one that seats about 500 people and one that seats 100 people. And so they do small experimental stuff in the 100-person theater, and they do major Broadway type musicals, off-Broadway musicals in the larger theater.
Very interesting.
Yeah, we have season tickets to it, and we've seen some very nice productions there.
Grocery shopping and provisioning? Is there anything in Naples?
Well, that is the one drawback to downtown Naples. There is nothing in easy walking distance from the city dock or the other marinas. There are a couple of stores that are very high-end stores that are within biking distance. But really the best bet would be if you're there, give us a call. Susan or I will come over, get you to grocery stores, West Marine, wherever you need to go. That's really going to be the best way if you're looking for major provisioning.
So generous of you. Our harbor hosts are wonderful in giving people the transportation they need when they're out cruising. Susan, did you want to say something?
I was just going to say, if you get here on a Saturday down on 3rd Street, which is, 5, 6, 7 blocks away, there is a really nice farmer's market that has pastries and vegetables and Italian food and grass-fed beef and all kinds of stuff that you can load up on.
Sounds fantastic. Okay, after you go to Naples, what's next and how far
An alternative to Naples, if people don't want to come to Naples, if they're not interested in fine dining and all that sort of thing, if you go just 7 nautical miles south of Naples, you can also stay at Marco Island. The entrance there is well marked. It's a deep water entry. Again, the waterway guides can steer you to marinas, but there are transient slips and anchorages available there. And it also has quite a few restaurants and shopping. But
is there any benefit to going to Marco Island rather than Naples?
It's probably a little quicker in and out. You're a little further south. You get into Marco Island and out of Marco Island quicker than you get all the way. Once you get into Naples Bay, you have to backtrack north about 2 miles. But other than that, no.
Tell us about Everglades City. I hear that's a beautiful place to visit.
Everglades City is a very interesting place. It's to get there from Naples, you would travel about 18 nautical miles south and clear the Cape Romano Shoals, which will be shown on your charts, and they run just to the south and west of Marco Island. Once you get past the shoals, you turn east, and you look for Indian Key Pass. Once you get into Indian Key Pass, you travel about 6 nautical miles through the mangrove islands that are there, up you're actually on the Barron River. And as Susan pointed out to me, when you look at it on the charts, it's going to look like a lot of very shallow water because of all the mangrove islands. However, there's no problem in the channel. We had our low water alarm set at 6 feet, and it never sounded all the way back in.
And the channel is very well marked.
Yeah. When you get to Everglades City, you're going to feel like you have gone back about 50 years in time, coming from either Marco Island or Naples, kind of affluent restaurant kind of communities, to a fishing village that's on the north edge of the Everglades at the end of a dead-end highway. You don't get there by accident, and it is really a unique place. The as you come in on the Barren River, you'll round a bend, and you can't miss the Rod and Gun Lodge. It sits on the right bank, and it has a long face dock, about 1,000 feet long.
Looks like an old lodge, or...
Pardon?
Does it look like an old hunting lodge?
Well, not. It's white. It's painted white, but it's a big building. You obviously know that it is not a home.
It's the biggest building in the area.
Yeah. And you can tie up there, and I would tie up. I would recommend keeping the bow facing upstream because you do get a reversing tide, and the ebbing tide, the outflow tide, is much stronger than the incoming tide. So tie up well that way. The Rod and Gun Lodge is 100 years old. It has hosted five presidents. It's where Nikita Khrushchev came to go tarpon fishing in Florida. And the list of Hollywood stars who have come there to stay and to go fishing and explore the Everglades is a mile long. As you walk through the building itself, it's like a natural history museum with taxidermy of all the major fish and mammals that could possibly live in Florida.
Very interesting.
The city itself is mainly a fishing city. It's a throwback to old Florida, and it has a very colorful history. When I said earlier gator poaching and drug running and rum running, this was the headquarters for a great deal of that in old times. Now it is the headquarters in the Southwest Florida for the stone crab industry. And you can walk from the Rod and Gun Lodge, continue walking upstream, staying on the streets closest to the water, and you'll come across a couple of very, very casual restaurants that will have the freshest stone crabs, frog legs, alligator bits, and fish that you're going to find anywhere in Florida, because this is where the fishermen offload them and ship them out to the restaurants in Miami and in Tampa.
And you can often sit outside at the restaurant, eat your stone crabs, and just watch all the, you know, the smaller recreational boats going up and down the river.
Have you ever tried alligator?
Yes. We've had it a number of times. Most of the time, it's served as small fried bits, and, you know, it could be fried anything.
It's kind of chewy.
Steve and I were actually in New Orleans, and we went to a Cajun camp almost where they served fried alligator and a lot of other strange things.
I'll bet. Swamp people have a different diet.
Yes. Okay, let's go a little bit further south, and I believe we hit Little Shark River.
Yes, both of our trips that we've taken down around the peninsula, we've stopped at the Little Shark River, and it is just a very pristine anchorage. From the time you go out of Everglades City and exit Indian Key Pass, it's about 26 nautical miles further south. It's a well-marked entrance, and you go in, and you are inside the Everglades National Park. Almost as soon as you get in, there's a bay that you could anchor in, but if there's any kind of a swell from the west, it might be a little rocky. So our recommendation is go about a half a mile to a mile upriver. The river is wide. It's deep, deep meaning like 20 feet.
Uh-huh.
You can drop a single anchor. There is a reversing current. You will swing on the tides, but the current down there is very, very mild. It's not something that you're going to have to use two anchors for or be worried about. And there is plenty of room to swing. You will probably be the only people there. And while you're there, I mean, you are in the Everglades National Park. You're about 25 to 30 miles from the nearest habitation. It's just nothing but wilderness. It's wonderful to put the dinghy down and just go exploring into the Everglades. I'd carry a handheld GPS to make sure you can get your find your way back, but it's not confusing at all.
The only drawback is, Bruce, I don't remember a place, if you have a dog, to get off on shore and let the dog do his thing, because you'd be climbing up in the mangroves.
That is true. If you have an animal that you have to get ashore, I would not do the Little Shark River. Good point. I know you've seen mangrove routes, and that's all there is in this part of the Everglades. You'd have to go in 10 or 15 miles to find solid land, and if you find that solid land, you might find something that would look you wouldn't want your dog to find.
Yeah. Interesting. So many of our loopers do travel with their pets, so that's an important consideration.
It is.
Okay, tell me about Marathon Key. I've heard so much about it. We've never been down that way. Is it something really special?
Well, Marathon Key, not so much. You have another decision when you leave the Little Shark River. And I will say that most boaters who go south go to Marathon Key.
Uh-huh.
They go straight south. It's about a 45 nautical mile trip down to Marathon, the last half of it inside Florida Bay in protected waters. Marathon Key, the keys are about 100 miles long from the time they leave the peninsula at the southeast corner and end in Key West at mile marker 101 on the highway there. Marathon Key is almost exactly halfway. I believe it is mile marker 50. And there are marinas there and anchorages there. So probably most boaters who do this go down to Marathon, and if they're going to spend the winter, I understand the rates are more reasonable at the marinas there than they are at Key West.
Key West.
You can go to Key West by your boat. You know, you can go to Marathon and spend the night and then head to Key West. Or you can just get a rental car and drive on down to Key West and spend a day or two and visit Key West that way. We have not actually taken that route. Both times that we've gone down, we've gone directly from the Little Shark River to Key West. And that's, if you're comfortable with an open water passage, it's about 58 nautical miles from the entrance buoy to the Little Shark River to the entrance buoy of the Northwest Channel at Key West. You are far enough south of Everglades City and far enough north of the Keys that there are no crab traps in this area. It's too far. It's not economical for the crabbers to fish here. So you can put it on autopilot, and you can watch the Everglades kites and the frigate birds soaring overhead, the dolphins, the sea turtles.
The flying fish.
And the ballyhoo, which will be sunning on the surface and go skittering away from you. It's a very peaceful ride if you have a nice day.
It's a long day, though, for a slow trawler.
It is. We left, each time we did it, we left at dawn. As soon as it was light enough to work our way out of the river safely, we were on our way, and we got there, you know, as the sun was going down.
Yeah, in the winter that we have short days.
Absolutely.
And Key West, what do you love about it?
You know, Key West is just a unique atmosphere. If you're doing the loop and you have not been to Key West, it's really worth a visit. It feels much more like a Caribbean island than it does a part of the United States. They call themselves the Conch Republic, and they have a very free-spirited, libertarian attitude. It's just a neat atmosphere down there. They're very tolerant of characters as well. You'll see people walking around in bathing suits and capes and wizard hats and all kinds of things.
And nobody looks twice at them.
There are a number of marinas available. There are also a lot of nice anchorages available around Key West. The two times that we went there, we stayed in Key West Bight, which is on the northwest corner of the island, and it has four marinas there, along with restaurants right on the bight, and there is a great grocery store there that you can stock up on right at the end of the dock.
And what is Mallory Square?
Well, Mallory Square, Duval Street is the main street. It runs east-west through Key West, and that is where most of the restaurants, bars, and shops are. It ends, its west end is a large public square called Mallory Square, and that looks out directly west from Key West. And Mallory Square is where everybody comes for the sunset. And it is quite a ritual. About an hour before the sun goes down, locals and tourists alike all wander down to Mallory Square. There are plenty of places where you can stop and buy a beverage to carry during the hour. Some of the best street performers in the country, from New York to San Francisco, leave those cold weather climates and come down to Key West for the winter to entertain the tourists. You can watch some fabulous street entertainment. And the street entertainers will finish their performance about 5 minutes before the sun goes down, just time enough to pass the hat. And then the whole crowd turns their attention to the west. And the small keys west of Key West help bring a lot of moisture into the air, so you get a lot of cloud formations down there. And you're looking straight west into the sunset with all these clouds, and sometimes the sunsets there are absolutely spectacular. And so people, it gets very quiet. Everybody watches the sunset, and then they applaud. They applaud very mildly if it's just a so-so sunset, or wildly if it's a terrific one. It's like they're grading God on how good the sunset
was. You know, Steve and I have a very odd situation. We're on the East Coast, and we're actually on the beach, but it's a river that comes off of the waterway, and we actually have spectacular sunsets right outside of our windows. It's a very strange situation.
Oh, nice.
I also wanted to mention that in addition to the sunsets, Key West has a couple of really good museums. Harry Truman used to spend his presidential vacations down there at the Truman White House, and that is open to the public. You walk through with docents who are very knowledgeable, but they do that because 80% of the furniture and furnishings that are there were his actual furniture and furnishings, including his poker table. That's a worthwhile trip. There is a Mel Fisher treasure museum. Mel Fisher has discovered the, let me get this right, Nuestra Señora de la Atocha, which was a Spanish galleon that was leaving to bring gold and silver from the New World back to Spain, and it sunk. And that treasure is on display there. There's also Ernest Hemingway's house, which is good to see as well. And lots of bars and restaurants. It's a neat place.
It sounds like a fun party place, really.
It is.
Okay, I think if you don't mind, Bruce and Susan, we'll stop for a quick commercial.
Absolutely, we'll be here.
Did you know that every mile of the Great Loop is covered by both the Waterway Guide and Skipper Bob? Use them to plan your Great Loop cruise and learn about the places you can visit. In the cockpit, important navigation info is always ready at your side, plus marina listings, anchorages, services, and so much more. Each Skipper Bob and Waterway Guide is updated yearly, and waterwayguide.com and skipperbob.net keep you current with navigation alerts, cruising news, fuel prices, and special deals. With the Waterway Guide and Skipper Bob at the helm, you'll always be on course. Order yours today at the AGLCA Ship Store at greatloop.org. Waterway Guide and Skipper Bob are proud sponsors at the Admiral level with AGLCA.
Okay, now tell us about the dry tortugas. I know very, very little about them.
Well, the dry tortugas are a national park, and they are one of the least visited national parks in the United States. They're located 60 nautical miles due west of Key West, and to get there you have to cross about 35 nautical miles of completely open water. When you are in Key West, that's the best place to go see them. You have options. You can take a seaplane that will take you out there, drop you off, and come back and pick you up some number of hours later. There are two high-speed catamarans that leave every morning from Key West Bight. They travel out. They drop everybody off for about 4 hours, and then they bring you back late afternoon. Or you can go on your own boat, which is what we did. The keys are small. The largest one is 10 acres, and that's Garden Key, and that is where Fort Jefferson was built. Fort Jefferson is massive. It was the largest brick fort ever built, using over 9 million bricks. It was built in the early 1800s because whoever controlled the Dry Tortugas controlled shipping between the Gulf Coast and the Atlantic Coast. It has a wonderful history. It was never completed because rifled cannon was invented, and that sliced right through brick. It was used as a prisoner camp, a Union prison camp during the Civil War, and Dr. Mudd, who set John Wilkes Booth's leg, was headquartered there. Then it became a Navy facility. They put coaling stations in to fuel their coal-fired ships. Hurricanes destroyed the coaling stations, and then it became a national park. So now, when you're out there, you have this great history you can explore in the park. You have great snorkeling near the old coaling station ruins and the shallow water on the west side of the Key, and better sunsets than in Key West. It's a fascinating trip, but it is very isolated. There's only one park ranger assigned out there, and if you go in your own boat, you really need to watch the weather because it's an area where you can get trapped for a while waiting for a weather window to get back. So you need to be prepared to stay. But if you're a little adventurous, it is one of the most spectacular sights in the world to see this massive fort rise out of the water. There are magnificent frigate birds that soar on the winds that come off the walls all day long. It's just a gorgeous place. It was a highlight of our Great Loop trip.
Well, thank you for sharing. Now, tell us about the very tip of the Keys.
Well, when you're going to go up the Keys, first of all, Key West is mile marker 1,243 of the intercoastal waterway, Norfolk Coast being zero. To put it in perspective, Fort Lauderdale is mile marker 1,064. So it's about 180 miles from Key West, statute miles that is, from Key West up to Fort Lauderdale. The Keys, the water in between the Florida Peninsula and the Keys is known as Florida Bay. It's very protected. It's shallow. You can travel in it in any weather conditions. You can also travel outside of the Keys. On the side to the south and the east side of the Keys, there is a reef that parallels the Keys about 5 miles further offshore, and that area between the reef and the Keys is known as Hawk Channel. Generally about 20 to 25 feet of water. Beautiful place. If the weather is nice, you can cruise up there very easily on autopilot. And you can go back and forth. There are about 5 bridges that looper boats can get under. So what we did was we traveled in Hawk Channel during the day, and then we crossed under a bridge and went into Florida Bay. There are actually 200 keys in the Keys, only 30 of which are occupied. So you can get into Florida Bay, crystal clear water. You can find, no matter what the wind conditions are, one of these unoccupied keys and sound your way in and spend a very peaceful night at anchor.
Beautiful.
When you get to the top of the Keys, you will be at Biscayne Bay. And if you go into Key Biscayne, the southern half of Key Biscayne is a state park, and there's a great little harbor there called No Name Harbor. Wonderful name, isn't it, No Name Harbor? It's an excellent protected anchorage inside the state park, and it is a place where people wait for a weather window to cross to the Bahamas. So you're likely to find other cruising boaters in there, whether loopers or not.
Uh-huh.
It's also, being a state park, they have a concession stand. You can dinghy ashore and get a burger or a chicken sandwich or salads, and they have a pump-out station there. But on your way in, there's something to note. If you decide to stop there, you enter the channel just south of Key Biscayne and turn north to get to No Name Harbor. But as you're entering, if you look ahead of you, you will see about 7 buildings on stilts on the flats of Key Biscayne. And this is an area, it's one of the most unique historic communities in Florida. It's called Stiltsville. Stiltsville began in 1933 when a man named Captain Crawfish Eddie Walker built a home on metal stilts out there. And over time, 21 homes were built in Stiltsville. And it was always a very colorful place. During the 30s, when Prohibition was in effect, the laws of the United States were that the gambling and the Prohibition only extended 1 mile offshore, and Stiltsville was more than 1 mile offshore. So a number of clubs started up, gambling clubs, and you could freely get alcohol there, and of course it's very close to Miami, so it was pretty heavily populated. Well, they extended the federal law to 3 miles offshore, and that killed the gambling and the alcohol being available there. But that didn't stop other clubs from being formed out there. There was a 150-foot ship that was deliberately grounded on the flats in the 1960s and opened up the Bikini Club. It cost $1 a year to join the Bikini Club. Ladies wearing bikinis got free drinks, and the upper floor was reserved for nude sunbathing. So it's a very colorful little area.
Unbelievable.
Hurricane Andrew came through in 1992 and destroyed a number of the homes, damaged others, and there was a big controversy. Some people thought Stiltsville was a true, unique part of historical Florida and should be preserved. Other people thought it was a blight on Florida and should be destroyed. The National Park Service canceled the leases and does not allow any of these structures to be repaired. So if you ever want to see Stiltsville, you better see it now because the next hurricane could get rid of it.
Are the homes, is it privately owned where the leases had been?
Yes, they were privately owned, and those people can still use them. They can't repair them, but they can still go out and use them. And I believe that there is a Stiltsville Historical Society that actually will take you out and take you on tours there occasionally.
Very interesting. How far is that area, Biscayne Bay, from the Bahamas?
I don't know the answer to that. I think it's only about 65 miles, but
that's
I'm not sure.
That's what I was going to say, about 60 miles. Yeah, uh-huh. It's a long day, but it's one day
for
a trawler.
Yeah, you can do it in a day.
I have to tell you an interesting email that we got about a month ago. We got an email from a man who said, "I read your book. I am Crawfish Eddie Walker's grandson."
Huh. Oh, my goodness.
He said he never knew his grandfather, but that his father, Crawfish Eddie Walker's son, was still alive and would be delighted to get together with us and tell us stories about Crawfish Eddie and fishing for Al Capone and lots of stories about Stiltsville. So we're going to try to make that happen. And
so interesting.
Yeah. Now, once you are done with Key Biscayne, you can, you're just below Miami. You can go into Miami and you can start the ICW there. We never did that because Miami has so many timed bridges. We always went up to Fort Lauderdale to get going. But that's kind of the trip through the Keys. It's really a very interesting route if you have the time to do it and don't mind spending money on the extra fuel.
Well, it sounds like it would be a real loss if you didn't take the time to do it. It sounds like it's a beautiful historical part of our country and part of the flavor of Florida. It's wonderful.
Yeah, there's a lot of history there and a lot of fun stuff to see, things that you will not see anyplace else in the United States.
Uh-huh. So I take it you don't recommend going across Lake Okeechobee.
Well, we did it twice. It's kind of a boring trip. You know, when you leave Fort Myers, the Caloosahatchee River is very scenic for about 10 miles, but then it becomes a canal with very high berms. You can't even see over the berms in many places to see what you're traveling through until you get to Lake Okeechobee. When you get to Lake Okeechobee, you have a choice of routes. There is a route that goes directly across the middle of the lake, and there is a route that goes around the southern rim. The southern rim is a little more scenic, a little more to see through there. And then you go out of Lake Okeechobee into another canal until you hit the St. Lucie River. And the St. Lucie River is very, very pretty, but there really just isn't, by comparison, there isn't much there. And Lake Okeechobee has had problems with depth. And I have no idea. Of course, we're in our dry season now, so the lake waters are going down. But there have been depth problems there in some years.
In the lake or in the canal?
In the lake.
In the lake. So you could still go around the canal, but it's a canal.
Well, even we touched bottom going around the southern rim route, too. the one time we came
true.
Across. We hit a sunken log.
And the locks sometimes are on limited openings when the water's low.
That's right. They have been.
They are. They're on limited openings, and there has been some rumor that budget cuts will make those operating hours even less.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, do you have any questions?
No, I don't.
Well, Bruce and Susan, this has been fascinating. I thank you very, very much.
Well,
thank
please,
you, Janice.
Please make sure that anybody who comes through knows that we are available here. If they get to Naples or Marco Island, we'd be glad to sit down with them, help mark their charts, show them where these things are, make sure that they have provisions from the local stores and that sort of thing. We'd be delighted to see any loopers who decide to come this way.
Thank you. Remember, everyone, you can find a harbor host on our webpage, members area, locate a harbor host. All you need to do is type in the city that you're interested in, and you'll get a list of the hosts with the mileages they are from that city, so you can find out how far away they are. Bruce and Susan, have a wonderful holiday season, and safe cruising wherever you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Same to you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.